නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස කිං වාදී සමනෝ කිමක්ඛායි තීති. Dear Dhamma friends, we actually have concluded the Brahmana Sutta last week, and therefore we have selected a new sutta for discussion. And this is actually a request came in order to handle this particular sutta, and it is called Madhupindika Sutta. So Madhupindika Sutta is available in Majjhima Nikaya and one of the interesting suttas, and discuss various aspects of the Dhamma. And there is a very beautiful story behind this sutta. So if we get on to the story, in one occasion Buddha was living in Nigrodharama. Nigrodharama was a monastery offered by the Shakyans, and it was located at the Kapilavattu, where Buddha has born, Prince Siddhartha has born. And in one occasion Buddha was staying there in Nigrodharama, and at that time he has went through the alms round in Kapilavattu, the city of Kapilavattu, and then after returning from the alms round, he went to a large forest, and it's called Mahavana, and great wood, and there he stayed in a under a tree. It's a Bilva sapling for the day's abiding. So it's something, some kind of a tree which is having large fruits. Anyway, so Buddha went there and he was staying there and spending some time in seclusion. And at that time there was another Brahmin, so rather another Sakyan, and he is called Dandapani. So he is somewhat famous for his arrogant nature, stubborn nature, and he never listened to anyone. And he too actually has gone to this great wood, and he too actually went on here and there, just walking and wandering, just to, you know, for the exercise, like jogging. So he is now little old and maintaining a walking stick, using which actually he is walking here and there for his exercise. And then he saw that Buddha was resting under a tree, and he approached there and he had a cordial discussion with the Buddha, just kind of a initial discussion. And after the completion of the initial discussion, now this Sakyan Dandapani wants to make a trouble to the Buddha. So in a way to have some sort of a difficult question to the Buddha. And so he asks a question from the Buddha. And he is asking, what does the recluse assert? What does the proclaim? What do you proclaim? So basically he is asking, what is the teaching of the Buddha? So what is his view? So there Buddha know that this person is somewhat stubborn and conceited. So in order to give him a small lesson, so instead of explaining in simple terms, so Buddha has given a fairly sophisticated answer. So he is mentioning in such a way that one does not quarrel with anyone in the world, with its gods, its maras and its brahmas, in this generation with its recluses and brahmins, its princes and its people, in such a way that perceptions no more underlie that Brahmin who abides detached from sensual pleasures, without perplexity, shorn of worry, free from craving for any kind of being. So kind of a philosophical answer Buddha has given, and basically we also can't understand it immediately. So kind of a philosophical answer Buddha is given to this the Sakyan Dandapani. Now we'll go through this statement slowly, And anyway, Sakyan Dandapani could not understand this. So the answer is fairly philosophical, and basically Buddha is talking about not quarreling with anyone in the world, not going to any argument in the anyone in the world, and again and he is giving some explanation of various categories in the society, like Brahmins, kings, princes, etc. And then on top of that, and he is referring to a particular person, actually to a Arahant. So that is what mentioned as underline that Brahmin. So here the Brahmin means an Arahant. So this Brahmin, this Arahant, does not have any underlying tendencies, and he doesn't have any desire for sensual pleasures, and he doesn't have any perplexity, no doubts, and no worries, no regrets, and all craving also has eliminated. And I am talking this kind of a person. I am keeping him as a, keeping this kind of a person as a aim in my teaching. So basically this is the answer Buddha has given, but the Dandapani, the Sakyan, could not understand it. So what he did was he simply shook his head and then wagged his tongue and raised his eyebrows and then went away. So he was not satisfied and with the Buddha's answer. He was not happy about Buddha's answer, and he couldn't even understood Buddha's answer. So he simply shook his head and wagged his tongue, and then he departed leaning onto the stick, to the walking stick. And then another interesting incident happened. Then Buddha, after returning from the great wood, he come back to the Nigrodharama, and when the time was come for the Dhamma sermon, Dhamma discussion, so here Buddha refers this discussion to the monks. So he has mentioned that I was dwelling at this great wood at the end after the alms round, and I was resting there, relaxing there, and at that time the Sakyan Dandapani has arrived there, and we too had a discussion, and there I have mentioned that my teaching is such where there is no argument or quarrels with others. So to that Brahmin, to that Arahant, there is no craving, there is no desires, and there is no any perplexity, and completely there is no impediments of the perceptions. Such kind of a teaching I am proclaiming. So I have given this kind of an answer. So there are actually monks also couldn't understand what Buddha was talking. There was a gathering of the monks, and Buddha has briefly explained what has happened, but the monks also couldn't understand what Buddha has mentioned. So what happened was, then one venerable raised up, and then he asked Buddha to explain it. Bante, we couldn't understand what you have mentioned. Could you elaborate this? And then Buddha gave another answer that is also somewhat difficult to comprehend. So there, Buddha mentioned, bhikkhu, as to the source through which perceptions and notions, mental proliferation beset a man, if nothing is found there to delight in, welcome and hold to, this is the end of the underlying tendency to lust, of the underlying tendency to aversion, of the underlying tendency to views, of the underlying tendency to doubt, of the underlying tendency to conceit, of the underlying tendency to desire for being, of the underlying tendency to ignorance. This is the end of resorting to rods and weapons, of quarrels, brawls, disputes, recrimination, malicious words and false speech. Here these evil unwholesome states cease without remainder. So there's another very comprehensive answer, but couldn't understand. So this is also a very difficult answer that Buddha has given. Basically, he is talking about several underlying tendency of views, doubt, desire for being, conceit, ignorance, etc. And he mentioned that one can eliminate all these underlying tendencies and all the various kinds of quarrels, disputes, taking of clubs, rods, weapons, all these unwholesome states. And how one can do it is through which perceptions and notions, mental proliferation beset a man. So if there are any sort of mental proliferations which beset a man, to another man there is no any clinging to those perceptions, to those mental proliferations. If so, that latter man, the second man, second person, doesn't have any of these underlying tendencies, not going to have any of these underlying tendencies. So some sort of a principle is there, and again some sort of a restrainment is there, a conduct is there, a behavior is there. So another way, little complicated answer. So the monks couldn't understand this either. So now, anyway, to the surprise of the monks, after mentioning this statement, Buddha raised from his seat and went to the dwelling place. So he again went away without explaining this answer either. Actually, Buddha has explained the discussion between him and the Dandapani. That also very short, and that couldn't understood. And then monks have requested to explain that, and then Buddha gave another explanation to that. And there, the explanation also fairly difficult to answer, difficult to understand. And without explaining it further, Buddha went away. Buddha raised up from his seat and went to the dwelling place. Now there's a discussion among the monks. So now what to do? Now we were in a trouble, now we were in a kind of a perplexity. We couldn't understand both. Now whom that we can rely upon? To where we can go in order to get a better explanation about this teaching? Who can explain this in detail? Now this is where actually they were discussing, and after discussing among themselves, they recognize, okay, there is one venerable called Mahakacchana, and he is praised by the Buddha for this kind of a purpose. So if there is some sort of a difficult Dhamma teaching was there, if it is in brief, so if we ask Venerable Mahakacchana to explain it, so he has such a talent that he can explain it in detail, in a very, detailed manner, so that the others can easily understand it. So that kind of a reputation was there about Venerable Mahakacchana. And Buddha too has admitted that, and Buddha too has given such a honorific title to him. So therefore the monks were thinking, so if we approach Venerable Mahakacchana, we would be able to get a good answer, good explanation to this difficult Dhamma teaching, to this deep Dhamma teaching. So they all decided to approach Venerable Mahakacchana, and so they went to meet Venerable Mahakacchana. After that, what happens? So they had cordial discussion, guest nature, where you go and meet the venerable and you just discuss typical matters, and simply completed the cordial discussion, the initial discussion. After that, now the monks are entering into the real point. Now they mentioned that Buddha has mentioned something like this. So he was abiding at Mahavana, that is the great wood, and there he had a brief discussion with Sakya and Dandapani, and there he had made a statement, and later he came and mentioned that statement to us, then we couldn't understand that. And then we asked Buddha to explain it. And as an explanation, he has given another kind of a statement that also we couldn't understand. So therefore, Venerable Sir, we came to you expecting some explanation, expecting some detailed account, so that we can understand what Buddha has preached. Now here an interesting incident happened, where Venerable Mahakacchana didn't admit the request immediately. So he mentioned, if someone is in need of heartwood, and if he is going to closer to a huge tree, without approaching the trunk, without cutting the trunk and getting the heartwood, suppose he is going up to various branches, to various leaves and flowers, and there he is trying to find the heartwood. So it is useless. So then, in the other side, we can say, this particular person doesn't have a good understanding about where the heartwood is available. So you people are like that. When the Buddha is there, he is the master, he is the basically the elucidator of the Dhamma, and he is the Tathagata, he is the person who explains about the deathless, he is the master. And when he was there, you should have asked from him. When he was there, you didn't ask from him. Now you are coming to me. It is very much like you are trying to find the heartwood in the branches or in the leaves. So you done a wrong thing. So now he refused the request. When the monks have put the request, so this Venerable Mahakacchana, he refused the request. Now, in a way, this is also an interesting point, that Venerable Mahakacchana's qualities are fairly exposed here, because he, even though he is well known for his extraordinary capabilities, skills to explain some deep Dhamma, and Buddha too has admitted that, he actually, without immediately giving the explanation, he is giving the emphasis to the Buddha. He is giving the honor to the Buddha, mentioning that Buddha is the teacher, Buddha is the master, Buddha is the elucidator of meaning, and he is the proclaimer. And therefore, you should have asked from him. So here actually the respect to the teacher, respect to the Buddha is well explained by the conduct of Venerable Mahakacchana. So rather than he himself telling, okay, let's explain, though this is what Buddha has mentioned, so without immediately doing so, so he make a statement that you should have asked from the Buddha. So this shows some faith, some respect, gratitude he is having towards the Buddha. Now after hearing this, what happened was, again the monks are now requesting, now they are pleading, don't say so. I mean, you are well known for your extraordinary skills for explaining the Dhamma. Some deep teachings you can explain in simple terms. So that is why we have approached you. Even Buddha has praised you. So please, without delaying, please explain this matter to us. Now they again request Venerable Mahakacchana to explain this sutta, this whatever the statement. Now he is going to explain what Buddha has mentioned. Now he actually started from the second statement. So the second statement is, where if there are any mental proliferations, notions, which actually can beset a man, to another person, if there is no any kind of delight in it, or if he doesn't find anything to attach to, and he is not encouraging any underlying tendencies, so a series of underlying tendencies were mentioned, and if he is behaving like that, then that actually causes to all underlying tendencies to fade away, and he may not get on to any troubles, not get on to any arguments, quarrels, and taking off any weapons, and all those unwholesome states will cease without a remainder. Now this is the second statement that Buddha gave as an explanation to that discussion between the Dandapani. So Venerable Mahakacchana refers this first, and so he explained how all this mental proliferation, conceptual proliferation starts, and what are the stages, very beautifully and systematic manner, starting from the very elementary process, from very fundamentals. He explained it. So there he mentioned chakkuncha ucho paticcha rupecha uppajjati chakku vinyana tinnang sangati passo passa paccha vedana. So there's a causal reaction happens when someone look at something. Say for example, you have healthy eyes and now you are looking at far sight. Suppose, to explain it a little further, suppose you are a young person and you, if you are a man, a boy, and then if a boy look at a young girl, a beautiful girl, so at the immediately there is no any issue. At the immediate sense, what happened is kind of a causal reaction. Chakkuncha uso paticca rupecha uppajjati chakku vinyana. So that is some sort of a say sensor level. Very fundamental level reaction happens. The eye is there, then that sight was there, the color, the form was there. And because of those two, there is eye consciousness. So kind of a cognition happened. On a very primordial level, very fundamental level, cognition happened. Tinnan sangati paso. Now this happens again and again. So this person is looking at that same sight again and again. So his eye is directed towards that sight. It's properly in the line of sight. And as a result of that, again and again, this eye consciousness arises. Now, since it is happening again and again, so it appears like there are three phenomena. Actually, the eye consciousness is a result of eye and the sight, eye and the form. But since this whole process happening repeatedly, it appears like there are three components. Basically, the eye and the sight and the resultant eye consciousness are like three components. And when one consider all these three together, it is called contact. Sangati passo, passapaccha vedana. And when the contact is present, there is a feeling. Now, so far, everything happens as a causal reaction. Now, this is common to even to the Buddha, to an Arahant, to any person, this is common. It's a causal reaction. That is the first stage, where eye is there, the form is there, they come together, they in the sense they are in the line of sight, and enough illumination is available, and the mind is, so the person is looking at this particular direction, and then as a result of that, eye consciousness arises, and again this repeatedly happens, and all these three together happening, and it is considered as contact. All three coming together is considered as contact. Due to this contact, the feeling arises. Now we are coming to the second stage. So in the second stage, now the person now interfere to the process. Now only he start to intentionally do something. So far the intention was not involved, but now he puts his hand and he intentionally want to recognize what he has felt. Yang vedeti tang sanjanati. So he has felt something and now he wants to know that, he wants to recognize that. And he already had his all data available. He has many past experience. And he has seen many sights in this situation. For example, he has seen many girls. And he is a young person. He has a lot of perception related to the girls, beautiful girls. And now he wants to recognize this particular sight clearly, properly. So he start to match or map through his own available signs, marks, perceptions to the current sight. Now, as a result of that, he is able to perceive what he has seen. Now he recognized, okay, this is a girl. Now, yang sanjanati tang vitakketi. Now, as a result of that, now he wants to think about her. He is now putting a thought around this perception. Suppose he is thinking, okay, she's a beautiful girl. Now, that is for the understanding, we can say this is the first thought, which is arisen. And then he puts another thought. And he puts another thought. Say, he is now thinking, where is she living? How old is she? And is she married? Is she have a fiancé? Or is she from which college? And etc. etc. Now he is putting several more thoughts onto the picture, onto the incident. Yang vitakketi tang papancheti. Now he purposely doing it. He is involved there and he has a sort of a pleasant feeling because of this sight. And as a result of that, he did the recognition. And now he started to think. Now he is thinking. And he is purposely thinking now. And then that is the conclusion of the second stage. Now, at some point, he reaches a third stage where the thinking process continues without his intervention. It's very much like starting all kind of vehicle, where the vehicle can't start by itself, so we have to do some starting, we have to do some ignition, initial torque we have to introduce using our own hand or using some other mechanism. And once the vehicle has started, so it has its own momentum to continue. So similarly here also, so this particular person intervened the process and he started to put various thoughts in few different directions. And now the thinking machine also has started. Once the thinking machine has started, it is now going on and on. Now this person doesn't need to intervene, rather the thinking itself is continuing. Yam papancheti tato nidanam purisam papancha sanya sankha samudacharanti atitanagata pachuppannesu chakku vinnyayesu rupesu. So there it is mentioned. So once the thinking has started, what one thinks about, that one mentally proliferates. Now the proliferation process starts. So he thinks in this direction, he thinks in another direction, he thinks related to the past, he thinks related to the future. Say for example, he is thinking, whether she is from a particular college and what is the kind of, education she had in the college. So if I am going to marry her, what would be my future? Where are we going to live? Where are we going to find a, a job? So whatever it is, in many different directions, he can think. But into the past, to the future, etc., etc., now the thinking is going on and on. Now, this person even can't stop it. Now, he is the one actually started it, but when it comes to the third stage, he actually have no control. So that is why it is mentioned, these perceptions and notions, mental proliferations, beset that particular person, beset a man. Now he is a victim actually. He now can't stop it. the thinking is going on and on. Now he simply has become kind of a slave to that thinking. And we were actually discussing only about the I, and through I this can happen. So whenever you have a healthy I and you are open, you are keeping attention, and there is a beautiful sight in front of you, and in at the very early stage there's a kind of a causal reaction happen, and after that, if it is a pleasant sight, pleasant feeling, then you want to further recognize it. So you are now further thinking, you start to think a little about it, and this is how you do the ignition, you do the starting. And after that, so that process start to develop and to many different directions, and ultimately even you become a slave to that very thinking. Now that is the third stage. Now you can see Venerable Mahakacchana is explaining this very beautifully, how this whole sensory impingement or sensory reactions are happening within a particular person. Actually, this very clear distinction between these three stages are well explained by Most Venerable Katukurunde Nyanananda Mahathero in his book Concept and Reality. So there he has actually very clearly mentioned these three states. So when one is seeing through one's eyes, so this process can happen. So similarly, Venerable Mahakacchana explains what happened when one hear a sound through ears, some similar process. Say for example, you are a person who is fond of music, and one occasion, so you are simply staying at your home, and a close by house is broadcasting some sort of a song, a music, maybe through the radio or TV or whatever it is. And now you at the beginning, what happened is simply the causal reaction. So you have your ears, now you put a little attention, and there is a sound available. As a result of that, ear consciousness arise. And that ear consciousness happen again and again, because that song continues. Accordingly, you also pay attention. And as a result of that, ear consciousness, ear sound, all three are there. So the ear contact is there. As a result of that, the feeling arise. Now that so far it is a causal reaction. Now what happens? Now you want to clearly recognize this sound. So you want to pay more attention. Now you go assume closer to the window or closer to the door, and you want to put more attention to recognize it properly. And now it is producing more and more pleasant feelings, and you want to recognize each and every, say, syllable, each and every sound, each and every, say, tone. And now you were able to recognize this, and now you want to think, who is the singer? At what time he has sung this song, and how well it is, and how beautiful it is. Now you put in different directions, now you think. Now that is the second stage. And when you start to think, this also started to carry collect some momentum, build some momentum, and ultimately that momentum overpowers you, and it is catching off more and more, and you start to think in many, many directions. Suppose you mention, you remember that how you have sang this song with another person, and how you were fascinated by that song several years ago, and how you behaved with that kind of a situation, and you may even map this song with your own life, and you are thinking in different directions, and it can lead to many different directions, and you now can't even stop this thinking. Now you are beset by this mental proliferation. That is the third stage. Now, Venerable Mahakacchana further explained about the nose. Ghalanchauso paticca gandhecho uppacchati ghana vinyana. So, he is explaining. So, when one has a healthy nose, you don't have any COVID-19, you don't have any cold, so you have a healthy nose. So, you can recognize various smells. Suppose there's a fragrance coming from far and you got some nose consciousness related to that. Fragrance is there, nose is there. As a result of that, the nose consciousness arises. Some knowing arises to the very fundamental level. Fundamental level knowing arises, very primary level knowing arises. And now it is happening again and again. As a result of that, the contact happens. That contact causes feeling. So far, it is causal reaction. After that, now you want to recognize it further because this feeling you interpret as a beautiful feeling, a kind of pleasant feeling, and you like it. Now you put your hand, now you are intervening in the process. So as a result of that, now slowly you start to think in different directions, and so far things are under control. And this thinking process is now catching up momentum. At one moment, so it is exceeding its limits and you can't stop it. Now you come to the third region or third state where the proliferation is going on and on. The mind start to think in many different directions, thinking about the past, projecting to the future, and contacting various other incidents, and as a result of that, mental proliferation is going on. Now you are simply a victim or slave to the very mental proliferation. So likewise, Venerable Mahakacchana explained about the jivha vinyana or to the tongue. Jivhanchauso paticca rasecha uppajjati jivha vinyana. So he explains, when tongue is there and when there is a taste available, due to those two causes, the tongue consciousness arises. And that tongue consciousness happens again and again because you are sort of putting that very taste again and again, and the tongue is healthy. And as a result of that, this tongue consciousness arises again and again. Now, it very much like three phenomena are there. All together call it contact. As a result of contact, the feeling arises. Now, so far it is happening even to the Buddha. Now, as a result of this feeling, now you want to recognize further because this feeling appears pleasurable, pleasant. Now you want to recognize it, you are mapping it with some past experiences, and you have experienced such a feeling long time ago, you have had such feeling some time back, and you have stored some information about this kind of a taste, and now you are recognizing. As a result of that, now actually you start to think, where did I have this ice cream? What is the brand of this? Who bought it? Who has made it? So something like that. Now you start to think. And now more and more you are thinking and you are still somewhat under control. And after some time, the thinking has got a lot of momentum and ultimately it start to think by its own. And there actually you have no control and the thinking going on and on. So therefore Venerable Mahakacchana mentioned, so even to the past, to the future, with respect to these kinds of tastes, now you start to mentally proliferate. So the mental proliferation therefore can start owing to the taste which is cognized by the tongue. So similarly, he explained kāyañca āusava paṭicca poṭṭabbe ca uppajjati kāya viññānam. So when you are going through some tactile sensations through the body, so there also the same process can start. And similarly, he explains mananca āusava paṭicca dhamme ca uppajjati mano viññānam. So he explains that when depending on the mind and the mind objects, so there the mind consciousness arise. Suppose that you were able to maintain a very peaceful mind, there was no any kind of a sign, there was no any kind of mental proliferation, mind was very peaceful, but due to some reason, suppose there is a mental object appeared on the mind. As a result of that, some sort of a cognition, very fundamental level cognition has happened. So that is the mind consciousness. And after that, it happens again and again, because that mental object reappear and you do this cognition again and again. As a result of that, mind consciousness arise again and again. Now they are very much like three phenomena: mind, mind object, and mind consciousness. As a result of that, the mind contact going to arise. That contact causes feeling to arise. Suppose this feeling is a pleasant feeling. Now, so far, actually, it's a causal reaction. Now, after that, what happens? Now, you want to recognize this feeling. You want to recognize this feeling, and now you use your own perceptions, preconceived ideas, likes and dislikes, etc., to match or to map with this feeling. And now you are building up various perceptions around it. And as a result of that, now you start to think. Various thoughts are now arising. And when you thinking more and more, you think about it. Now, after some time, this thinking actually catching up its momentum. And now you are going to more and more thinking about the past, about the future, how you have behaved in the past, how you are going to do in the future, etc., etc. Now the proliferation is catching up. Now ultimately on the third stage, that mental proliferation is going through more and more. It is related to the future, maybe related to the past, and even based on the present phenomena. And again, because of this mental object, now it's a long process going on and on, and ultimately the mental proliferation beset you. So mind objects cognizable through the mind ultimately causes this whole this particular person to become a slave, a victim of this very thinking. Now Venerable Mahakacchana explains like this onto this kind of a proliferation process. Actually, proliferation process is something essential to understand, because if you are doing proper vipassana, if you are engaged in any kind of mindfulness development, so you should experience fading away of proliferations or reduction of proliferation. If still you are encouraging proliferation, still you are enjoying proliferation, and if there is no any kind of a reduction in proliferation, so that means you haven't properly practiced in a way. I'm not saying that the very early stages of the practice can do this, but anyway, so this process, this mental proliferation, is something that we are trying to reduce through the practice. Say for example, if you are on walking path, you are keeping your attention onto your left leg, you are keeping your attention onto your right leg. Suppose the mind is keep on thinking, because we typically are in a mental proliferation. But now we want to break that vicious cycle. So time to time what we do is we are keeping our attention on each and every step. So time to time, so we are cutting that mental proliferation. We are breaking that mental proliferation. Suppose, just for the explanation, suppose we have some sort of 100% mental energy, and that whole energy being consumed on the mental proliferation. But during the walking path, during the walking period, we are time to time breaking that cycle and putting some attention towards where our foot is touching. Suppose now 5% of your energy is forwarded or concentrated to that walking process. Still 95% proliferation is going on. But you are continuing your practice. As a result of that, now more and more you do this, paying attention to the walking, and as a result of that, so more and more you are breaking that mental proliferation, that vicious cycle. Now say 10%, 20% of your mental energy is fairly targeted, fairly aimed at the foot. So more and more now you are trying to recognize what is happening at your foot, what is happening at each step. So there you are diverting your energy. And as a result of that, now mind is fairly losing its momentum, that proliferation is losing its momentum. Now the proliferation process is weakening. As a result of that, now slowly you are getting more and more collected mind towards the desired process, that is the mindful walking, and that is actually a kind of a neutral process. It is not something very attractive process. It is not something kind of a deluded process. Rather, it's a very neutral, calming, peaceful process. Now you actually is diverting completely illusory, delusion kind of process with another very calm, peaceful process. Kind of a replacement happens. Suppose you are able to divert more and more energy to this calm process, mindful walking, and when you gain more energy to that, say 60%, 70%, that means mental proliferation has become weaker and weaker. And sometimes you may even experience complete absence of mental proliferation. Now your complete attention is on the mindful walking, and mind has become completely quiet. Inner chatter has completely quietened. And with a silent mind, now you are able to fully comprehend the walking path, fully comprehend the walking process, what is happening at each step, and you may even can stop the labeling, noting, and that way you can have a completely silent mind. With such a completely silent, focused mind, now you are experiencing the walking process. So at this time, if you look back, so your mental proliferation has completely stopped. So you are experiencing a very lighter mind, very calm mind, peaceful mind, concentrated mind. It doesn't think to the past, future, or even to the present moment. There are no thoughts at all. Mind is well focused, without thoughts, but a clear comprehension is there. You are deeply comprehending the ongoing process. Proliferation has completely stopped. So likewise, temporarily, as you are improving in the mindful walking, you may understand, okay, the mental proliferation can stop. So similarly, through anapanasati, mindful breathing, the similar thing can happen. Say rising and falling, if you are continuing, the same process can happen. So whatever the mindfulness practice that you involve with is capable of reducing mental proliferation, capable of cutting through this mental proliferation. And this is not the only way. but I am referring to our own practice. So the practice, if you are doing properly, so it has the capacity to cut off this mental proliferation. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If we have any new friends joining us for the very first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them to me via chat. I'd like to invite Chita Devi to please ask the first question.
Thank you. Bhante, I'd just like to clarify the... You spoke about the mind in terms of the mind objects and the mind consciousness. When you say a mind object, is that a thought that you're talking about?
Not only thoughts. Actually, this thought consists of various components. Actually, it may have kind of a sign. Suppose you are getting a sign of your son. Say there are the kind of a little mental images also there. With that, there may be a little thought also available, but that is actually happening on to later stages. But very early stages, it's a very simple mental image. And then there could be a little memory also associated with it. And then, you know, there may be a slight feeling also attached to it. And maybe kind of your mind is being diverted towards that. So that attention is also there. So likewise, Buddha explained this name and form, Nama Rupa, as consisting of five primary components, five fundamental components, and that is what actually we are referring here. And thought is actually also a part of it, but it's very, say, Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. Feeling is there, perception kind of mark is there, sign is there, little amount of, say, intention is there, contact is there, and your attention is also there. So when these fundamental components are there, now you recognize it and now you are adding a thought to it. So it is very much like the thought happens as another level, at a developed level, not at the very, say, primary level. At the very primary level, what we have is a kind of an intention, very slight intention. So this intention actually develops to a thought. We can say actually intention also kind of a thought, but I mean typically we call it as an intention. That intention further develops and we can add different levels of thinking.
When you say intention, Bhante, do you mean volition? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. Volition, intention, same thing.
Yes. So, for an example, we are sitting here and then suddenly, when you say an image, it could be a person or an incident or whatever. Is that correct?
Yeah, incident, when we are calling it as an incident, that means we have gone far. Where we have introduced so many other attributes and we have recognized it to something. But the very early stages, we can't say it as an incident, but it is simply a very primary, very fundamental mental image.
Okay.
So that is actually in another sutta, in Kalahavivada Sutta, Buddha mentioned Sanya Nidanahi Papancha Sankha. So this sanya, this little fundamental signs, are the cause of mental proliferation. So you can say, actually, Venerable Mahakachana give more detailed explanation, and Buddha simply mentioned there in the Kalaha Vivada Sutta, this sanya, perception, or the even before that, the signs, marks, are the primary or the fundamental cause of mental proliferation.
So then there is the contact and the vijnana comes into that, right?
Yeah.
Bhante?
Yes, yes.
My mind consciousness, vinyana. So the same thing like the, with the eye. So
yes.
You have this primitive sort of what we are calling this mental object, which is the object, and there is the mind, and there is the contact, and then the consciousness comes in, and then only the feeling comes in.
Correct.
And then from there, the thinking, and then the whole process starts.
Correct. Yes, yes.
So in real life, in the practical life, we have to break it at that level of the feeling. Would that be right to say that?
If we can stop at the level of feeling, that is good. But you know, even to a noble person, this whole three stages can happen.
I see.
So, I mean, just knowing the theory, we can't actually stop the whole process because the mental proliferation is so strong. So actually, if you refer, say, the last sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha talks about further restrainment of the faculties, Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where Buddha mentioned that, I mean, various techniques, how to overcome this kind of mental proliferation. And again, even at the second level, say, even if one is a noble person, there also Buddha mentioned the proliferation can happen, but he has a different approach to overcome it. So there are three techniques mentioned to a typical practitioner to overcome that. So that is to see that proliferated state, the new state, as a kind of a gross state. And similarly, to see that state as something conditioned. And you went through kind of a conditioned process, fabrication. And so this new state is some sort of a fabrication. It's a kind of a fantasy. It's not a real thing. So to understand that fabricated nature is another approach. And the other one Buddha mentioned is the Olarikan Sankatam Parisaupanna. And to see this very, very causal nature of this whole process. Yeah. Like today we explained, Chakkuncha Paricca Rupeja Uppadhi Chakku Vinyana. Now, if the kind of pressure, kind of agitation has arisen in the mind, owing to the sight, so you can recognize how this whole process has happened. There was eye, there was sight, then the eye consciousness arising, and as a result of that, the eye contact. So likewise, you apply the theory, the Patisamuppada onto it, and that is another approach. So these are the three approaches that Buddha mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So that is actually, Buddha mentioned something that one has to develop, in the sense that at the beginning, you may not be able to cut off mental proliferation immediately. You may take several, different approaches. You can apply any of these techniques and say it may take several minutes to stop it. So that is practical. But later Buddha gave some sort of a reference, and when, if you are able to reach to some very high speed level, some sort of a new state has arisen in the mind, kind of an ignited state, kind of a, say, strange state, agitated state has arisen in the mind, but you quickly able to calm down and step back to that non-proliferative, peaceful, calm, say, non-associated kind of a state very quickly, like a blink of an eye. So that is the reference that he has given to a practitioner. And later, he has mentioned to the kind of a practice to the noble person, to a trainee. So there he mentioned a different approach. So that is also quite interesting. So that in one sense represent that even a trainee, that means a Sovan, Sakadagami, Anagami, also can get on to this kind of a proliferation. And but advice is, now he doesn't need to use those very technical process what Buddha has mentioned to a typical person, to a typical practitioner, but to a trainee, Buddha mentioned, you can quickly come back to the original state of the mind, because you have actually, you have your own understanding, you have your own experience of the non-proliferated state, completely peaceful state, calm state, say unassociated state, non-grasping state, you have well established. You have tasted it a lot, but and you have advised the mind a lot to stay there, not to involve with mental proliferation. So you have that kind of an inclination where not to cling, not to attach, not to do any kind of an association, keeping the mind completely free, liberated. But unfortunately, because of the latent tendencies, again the mind has gone and grasped. So there Buddha mentioned, atti yati harayati jiguchati. So you now have some sort of a shame what this mind is doing. So far I have taught this mind, I have enough experience, so there are enough reasons to stay without grasping. See this naughty mind, again go and grasp something. So that kind of a attitude is built up in the noble person. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so don't encourage this mental proliferation, rather quickly go back to that free nature, free state of the mind, understanding the naughty nature of the mind. So basically it's very much like taming a child, where you do advise enough to a child, but still he did a naughty thing. Now you quickly, you know, very much like you give an advice, or you simply, look at him. So when he noticed that mother is looking at me, so he quickly stopped the wrong thing, something like that.
So how can, as a practical guide for us, because we are ordinary people, apply that immediately when the thinking starts, Bhante.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the thing.
What?
So you can't do it immediately when you have less mindfulness. So say for example, you are a person who gets angry quickly. On such situation, suppose you become angry and you already blame someone, and after several minutes you regret. So this is the typical nature what happens. But that indicates less mindfulness, less practice. But now as you continue your practice, what happens is, there when you are in angry mood, you can recognize. Now if you are able to recognize that you are not in a good mood, you are in an angry mood, you can control at least quarreling with another person, at least blaming to another person, you can stop that. So that is a development actually. But internally you are burning, can't help. You couldn't stop then, but at least now you do avoid blaming, arguing, quarreling, etc. But when you are further and further improving yourself, practicing, what happens is now that burning also become less and less. Because you are able to recognize this anger, how it is developing at its early stages. It may not come to the very higher levels of burning as before now. You can overcome burning at early stages. And you are further improving. As you are further improving, as you said, when the very first thought, the very second thought arising towards this particular person, it is not kind of an anger there. It's kind of a very, little resistance, maybe a very minor kind of a aversion. I don't know the proper term, kind of a dislike. Very minor dislike is the one actually arising at the very early stages. So that you were able to notice. And once you notice that, probably now you can overcome that and you can keep your mind again calm, because you are able to cut it off at the very early stages. So likewise, the mindfulness practice and whatever the insight practice help us to come to that level of stage. That is what Buddha mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So at the blink of your eye, you are able to re-establish on yourself on that calm state.
So basically what I'm hearing is we have to, the more and more we develop mindfulness, and also contemplation has to come with that as well, we can improve this proliferation, mental proliferation.
Yeah, cut off mental proliferation.
Cut off. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So actually, it is one of the key goal of the practice, we can say, because that's what I want to emphasize. So if you are not experiencing reducing of mental proliferation after many months or years of practice, then something wrong. So one definite goal or one definite result of your proper practice is the feeling that you are not doing too much proliferation now. Mind is not involved in too much thinking now. You can cut it off quickly. So mind is time to time at least experiencing very calm state, inner silence. It is not just because of the concentration practice. You know, I mean, because of the concentration practice, samatha practice, also you can have completely silent mind. But that is very temporary. But yes. What I am trying to emphasize is not just because of the concentration, but by recognizing this proliferation, applying wisdom to it again and again, seeing, as Buddha mentioned, seeing that gross nature of it, seeing the conditioned nature of it, and then you understand it is useless. No point of encouraging it. So I am the one who has fabricated this whole mess. So I am the one who has weaved this net. And ultimately, I am becoming the victim of this process.
Yes.
So, the more we understand that vicious cycle, what we are doing to ourselves, then there's a better opportunity for us to overcome that.
So basically, we have to also contemplate and then apply wisdom.
Yes.
Which is a form of vipassana.
Definitely.
Also.
Exactly. Definitely. This is vipassana, actually. That's what I am telling. So, the better approach, or the lasting approach, is the vipassana, where it is not by through kind of a pressure that you stop. Rather, you understand the futile nature of this process.
So, yeah. We can do vipassana in daily life also when certain things come up. We just can sit quietly and work it out.
Correct. Correct. That's right. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Hopefully I get this name correct this time. Ravi Karuna Ratne. You may ask your question.
Yeah, Bhante, hi.
Yes.
Bhante, I have a small question, it's a very elementary question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have this Chitaku Vinyana, Sota Vinyana, Gana Vinyana, the consciousness of from the eye and all the different, from the Salayatanas coming in. Now, wouldn't it all of them finally go into your mind?
Yeah.
And the one is Mano Vinyana.
Yeah.
So, indirectly be that some things can come direct to the mind, like your thinking process, instead of coming through your eye, nose, ear, and the other organs.
Yeah.
So, wouldn't it really, sometimes I feel that all these other things coming through the eye, ear, nose, everything else, also goes into the mind and goes into the papancha and the whole works.
Correct, yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes. What you're saying is correct. So the initial triggering can happen through the other five senses and even by the mind itself. And ultimately, the proliferation happens inside the mind. That is, ultimately, the mind is the one going to suffer and involved in the mental proliferation. And that is well explained in certain other suttas, like, say, Unnabha Brahmana Sutta in Indriya Samyutta. There is one Brahmin called Unnab. So he had made a kind of a good observation. So he says that even though we have an eye, so eye only can see sights. It can't listen to sounds. Similarly, even though we have ears, it can only listen to sounds. It can't see sights. So likewise, he mentioned that each and every sense organ has its own domain. So eye with sights, ear with sounds, nose with the say smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tactile sensations. And then he asks, now when this process has happened, nothing remains there. So when you see something through your eye, if you can simply close your eyes, so that is nothing remains on your eye. So who is going to consume all these things ultimately? So then Buddha answers, that is the mind, as you said correctly. So mind is the one ultimately going to consume all these things, and as you said, ultimately do the mental proliferation related to the past, related to the future. But the point here, what Venerable Mahakachana highlights, is that triggering the mental proliferation is actually triggered through an eye, maybe triggered through ear, triggered by the nose, etc. But ultimately, who is going to suffer is the mind.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Joseph to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Hello, Bhante.
Yes?
I have a question. I'm reading from the Manuals of Dhamma by Venerable Ledi Sayadaw of Burma.
Uh-huh.
And in there, I was grappling this idea of the six bases, the six sense bases, when he talks that the mind, well, it says the eye basis is the element of the sensorium within the eyeball where consciousness of sight is generated,
mm-hmm.
and Sirius as similar to the ear for sound, the nose for smell, tongue for taste, body for touch. And then he says the heart basis is a kind of very fine, bright, subtle matter within the organ of heart where mind consciousness is generated. And I've been kind of been thinking about that a lot and trying to grapple with that idea. I haven't heard it come up elsewhere, this idea of the heart basis for the mind. And
yeah.
I'm wondering if you have thoughts on that or can give me some ideas on what Venerable Sayadaw is talking about here.
Yeah. So actually, this is the Abhidhamma explanation where even the mind, they relate with some physical counterpart, and that is what they call it as heart, the Hadevattu. So Hadevattu Rupa is responsible for the sort of the operation of the mind. So that is why, that is how the Abhidhamma explains. And on top of that, so there are cognitive processes, Chitta Viti also introduced. So likewise, you know, there's another level of explanation is available in the Abhidhamma. But here actually we tried only based on the Sutta teachings to give a better explanation without getting to Abhidhammic explanation. So Abhidhammic explanation is more, we can say, more detailed and maybe has some later kind of recent additions. You know, Buddha's teaching has evolved thousands of years, and the suttas can be considered as most primordial or authentic teachings. And later, on top of that, there are many other, say, explanations have built up and added to the canon. So likewise, things have enumerated, or things have become somewhat complicated. So later, actually, people started to give various models to this whole cognitive process. And they have come across this kind of a Hadaya, Vattu, Rupa, etc. Such explanation is not available in the Sutta Pitaka, and it is available only in the Abhidhamma Pitaka.
So, does that mean when we talk about, or when the Buddha talks about the mind, I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand, if I can understand where the sound is existing because of the sound wave, you know, hitting the eardrum, but the mind, I mean, where is it existing? I guess in the West we now think it's existing in the brain.
Yeah.
But I don't think the Buddha, what would he say about that?
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, it's difficult to answer actually. Abhidhamma says it is related to the heart, and it is not the heart muscle, but the some amount of blood constantly circulating in the heart. That is where the mind is existing. So that is actually a kind of an explanation, and a lot of people argue on that explanation also. So it is very difficult to give a concrete answer where mind exists. So, and certain agreeable facts also available from the Sutta Pitaka, like Guhasayang is another term used, I think, in the Sutta Pitaka in Dhammapada, where sometimes it is mentioned that the mind associates some sort of a cave-like thing, so which can imagine like it is very much like the heart. But these are very difficult to answer, because what we can say is that when Buddha explains about the consciousness, there are six types of consciousness Buddha mentioned. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, tongue consciousness, nose consciousness, say body consciousness, and the mind consciousness. So that we can say the cognition happened, and with respect to where cognition happened, the name has given. So if you refer Maha Tanha Sankhya Sutta, so there Buddha mentioned with respect to the place where it is arising, the different terms are given. When it is arising with respect to the eye consciousness. When it is arising with respect to ear, it is ear consciousness. So likewise, based on the sense organ, where it is arising, the consciousness is named. So in other terms, we can say, therefore, the ability of presence of the consciousness is available throughout the body. We can't say at a particular place, only it is available on that particular place. Only at the heart, we can't say in that sense. So it can arise at ear. It can arise at nose. It can arise at eye. It can arise at the body, tongue, and similarly at the mind. So likewise, it's a kind of a broader concept and very difficult to answer. And in the explanation we can say, so the ability to arise consciousness is available throughout the body.
Thank you very much, Pante.
Yeah.
Everyone's online.
I believe that's the last question that we have for tonight, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. If there is no any other question, we can wind up the session. And today we have started a new sutta, and we all try to understand that. And again, spend some time in discussing the Dhamma. With that, we were able to accumulate some merits, and we'll share these merits with all the beings. And let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe bhūtā anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe sattā anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම්පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා imina punya kamme ne mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kamme ne mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu